Hoover, who had ridden a crest of popular adulation to the White House only to demonstrate a seemingly imperishable gift for incurring blame, now stood answerable for the wait outside polling stations in the Bronx. He had already given his name to the shanty towns, to the patched aprons and mule-drawn carts and other desperate improvisations that had darkened his last years in office. Nowhere else in the world had the victims of the World Depression settled on so personal a scapegoat for their country's lot. Nowhere else had yesterday's icon of affluence so durably become today's byname for destitution. Such a humbling fall from grace turned incumbency from an asset into a handicap, and handed any challenger a precious advantage, if only he knew how to exploit it. And Roosevelt did. He knew how to pit his sunny promise against Hoover's grim resignation. The allure of experiment, any experiment, against tired doctrine and bankrupt orthodoxy. How to uphold the forgotten man at the bottom of the economic pyramid and reproach the few with the plight of the many. He knew how to run the classic campaign of opposition to the status quo. Democrats, he told 2,500 diners at a banquet in Chicago, were the party of I will, Republicans of I would have but. His program of government was flexible, so flexible that it never stopped evolving, but when the Republicans derided his glittering generalities, his supporters retorted that he, at least, was not promising more than he could deliver. Were they reminding the Republican incumbents of their most exuberant slogan of the 1928 campaign? A chicken in every pot, a car in every garage? All this bewildered the foreign press. Where was the ideology? Where were the fault lines between left and right? At the Democratic National Convention in Chicago in June, a correspondent from the Manchester Guardian gazed through the glare at the political folk festival. The wheeling doves, marching bands in fur shakos, radio singers on the chairman's desk, and imagined a Gustave Doré rendering of hell. Delegates paraded, cakewalked, and snake-danced down the aisles. How did American and English politics compare? A voice asked him. Politics? He replied. How should I know? So far, I have seen everything here except politics. 9 weeks before the election, a German reporter complained. He saw almost no sign of it on the streets of New York. Nothing to compare to the flickering neon advertisements for cigarettes and movies. Once, as he was driving out of the city with a Republican assemblyman, boys pressed yellow and red metallic bumper stickers on them and others, stopped at red lights. "We want beer," they read, followed by "Hoover" or "Roosevelt." Price was negotiable. One boy set off a bidding war between drivers, but otherwise the contest was bloodless. This was, the reporter concluded, an apolitical country, quite unlike Germany and Russia.